Hello and welcome back to the Handstand Cast with me, Emmett Lewis. And I am flying solo this week because my glorious co-host is off on a well-earned holiday in Italy. I believe he's in Sicily. So as customary, I'll ask Mikhail, how's he doing?
Why do you make me do this, Emmett?
See, brilliant. So yeah, I haven't actually really got a topic, but I'm going to ramble on some stuff because I... you know, give you guys a bit of a catch up what we've been doing, a bit of a sneak peek behind the scenes, what's been going on, and yeah, some other ramblings and observations. So first, a little sneak peek behind the scenes. So as some of you might know, there's the Handstand Press magazine, which is awesome. You guys should check it out if you haven't checked it out. It's one of those things, I think the quality of it doesn't really come across in the social media and in the pictures. It's like when you pick it up, it is a meaty tome. It's very good quality, very nice paper, nice build. But I had a sneak peek behind one of the articles coming up in the next issue, the Christmas sort of end of the year release. It was an interview with Stephanie Millinger, and there's just one bit that got showed to me. Stephanie Millinger warms up with 100 Stalder presses, and then she's ready to go into her training every day. So just contemplate that for a second. Now, I'm sure some people can debate Stephanie Millinger's form, whatever, I'm not interested in that. Even just 100 of anything, like press-wise, as your warm-up is fucking unreal. Like, I don't think a lot of people appreciate what... you know, what a high-level athlete is, and also what high-level athlete who is dedicated to working and has the genetic talent to go to limit. Like, that's unreal. There's a lot of people who can Stalder press and don't do 100 Stalder presses in a year. So, you know, maybe the answer to your question you've been wanting to have answered is do more presses. Could it just be that? Anyway, sorry, I just wanted to share that because it was, you know, mind-blowing. Obviously, we know Stephanie has some world records in that as well. But, yeah... and that's every day of the week, 700 Stalder presses a week. Let me grab my calculator. I should have calculated that beforehand. And I can't do maths in my head. So, 700 a week by 52, I'll give her 2 weeks off for holidays, by 50, 35,000 Stalder presses a year. Yeah, that's a lot of Stalder presses. And I'm just mind blown. That's a lot of volume. So, yeah, we have a lot of stuff. Like, it's, as you probably know, the cast has been a bit sporadic lately because we've been all over the place. Mick has been all over the place. I've been all over the place. And, yeah, it's just been hard to line things up. But we should be coming up for the last half of the year, able to roll out weekly or 3 episodes a month anyway. So, yeah, thank you guys for all sticking in. Thank you for your grace to come back. And thank you for missing us. So some of the things going on behind the scenes for myself is, as some of you might have known, we purchased the Monasterium. So we've been working on that, and we've been hosting some residencies and test events. For basically, the goal is to have a arts organization that supports live-in training, early stage creation process work in circus arts, as well as doing some other events and filming and stuff like that. So this is all kind of interesting because we'll be the first space in Ireland to do this kind of work. So that gives us, you know, it gives an opportunity to circus arts in Ireland to to have a space where people are able to go into basically a boilerplate of creation, where they have facilities, they have food, sleeping arrangements. So if you've ever been in an artistic company, a lot of time when you're doing these kind of normal creative phases, you might be in a theater for, you know, 2 to 8 hours a day, possibly 12 hours closer to thing, but then you're still going back to your normal life. You still have to look after normal stuff. So it kind of gives a unique kind of creative space away from reality to kind of get deep into the work. So it's very interesting because they have them for dance, they have them for theater, but we're the first one doing it for circus. So it'd be very interesting to see how that goes. And so far it's been very well received. And I know a lot of people have already sort of seen some of the photos and commented and said, oh, they can't wait to come. There will be opportunities come, don't worry, we'll just let us get set up a bit. So yeah, it's all a lot of fun. And trust me, when you're running a haunted monastery in Ireland, weird stuff happens, mainly with the house breaking down and get repaired. So we're sorting that out, sorting the gardening out. all these kind of things. We will be doing at some stage work weeks, I suppose we're calling them, where you come do 3 to 4 hours work exchange and then 3 to 4 hours or even longer of training and food and other stuff. So a bit more of a kind of fun vibe. So watch out for them when we announce them. Probably announce them over the cast and not so much over general social media to keep it to the cool crew. Other than that, I suppose we should get into a bit of handstands. So something I've been thinking about lately in handstands in general is, well, not lately, the last day or two, it sort of came to me, is when we're looking at a straight line handstand, one of the things we're looking at in this is, this mightn't be a big revelation to you, and it shouldn't have been a big revelation to me, but we're looking to essentially get the spine straight. This is one of the goals people want to do. This means we're trying to remove the lumbar curve. So think of like flex your abs, pull your stomach in, all this. But we're also trying to make the top and the bottom of the thoracic spine go kyphotic, go lordotic. So curve in the opposite direction. So it's kind of interesting when you think about it. It's like, this is what a lot of these cues are aiming at. When we think about pulling the ribs down, we think about pushing but keeping the sternum down. It's like, okay, we're trying not to allow the center part of the T-spine to move, but the upper and lower part of the T-spine, so at the cervical thoracic junction where the neck and the T-spine meet, and the lumbar thoracic junction at the floating ribs meet, and trying to push them backwards. So it's just an anatomical observation. I had got nothing more on it, but it is an interesting one just to think about. It's like, ah, that's what we're trying to do. And then if we push too hard, if we don't open the shoulders in the correct direction, then we generate reverse curvature in the spine, with the hump in the middle of the spine, however big that hump may be, going towards the sternum. And that is basically, it's that end of the spine, the middle part of the spine moving, or the T-spine curve, the kyphotic curve of the spine, versus the tails of it. So interesting to think about, interesting to look at, I suppose. Just a little anatomical quirk for you guys. As I said, I have no script, so I'm just pulling this out of my ass. So it is kind of interesting as well when we think about that, is from in terms of the push. If we think about, if we were looking at the push, I always say the push that we're using, the vertical displacement of the center of mass from the ground, basically is, people think it's coming from pure elevation of the shoulders. If it was coming from pure elevation of the shoulders, that would give us one shape. But if we want to put more power and more musculature into it, then it makes sense that the actual T-spine on that bit will extend. And it is one of these things that we can dissociate the extension of the T-spine from the actual expansion of the rib cage. So this is one of the things, like, we're, you know, crushing the ribs at the front, but then at the same time we're extending the spine and keeping the ribs down. So it gives you an idea that we're beginning to get more and more muscles involved into the push, or possibly presenting better leverage into this via not just making it a movement of the scapula on the thorax, but a movement of the scapula in concert with the thorax motion as well. So subtle difference, but it is one of those things that gives, you know, it gives a certain alignment, but also the alignment is possibly one of the reasons that people have discovered, is like, oh, if I choose this alignment, this allows me to leverage the muscles better and point my force better. So, little something for you to think about. So, one of the things that was interesting to me over the last couple of weeks is that we were filming some courses here. We had Josh Lee and Emma Laitla, as well as Mikhail, in modeling for these courses. And we touched on it in the last cast, but I kind of want to touch on it in a bit more depth, where the models, they were able to replicate the mistakes. So I was doing a lot of photography as well. I was trying to document every kind of shape and alignment and kind of form break I could think of. So I took thousands of photos. And while they could demonstrate things with their personalized perfect form, as we always remember, form is always personalized to the individual. It's an abstract concept when we apply it to an abstract thing. And then when we apply it to a body with all its previous history, its own unique geometry, it becomes personal. But one of the things is they were able to do the moves, you know, in their textbook form that we were filming. But then when I wanted them to demonstrate the mistakes, they could. And it was really interesting idea that these people are so good that they can do it right, but they can also do it wrong, or if they can't do it wrong, they can fall out in the way I wanted them to fall out, to capture the cause of the fall. So it was very interesting to think about that level of skill. Like, obviously, the models in Mikhail are quite, they're all very good. They all do one arms, do figures, you know, all the high level vocab on the floor, on canes, whatever. But even this idea of like choosing to do something wrong is kind of interesting, because if we think about texture and variety, is one of these things that like we always have small mistakes in what we're doing. Like, we never repeat a movement the same way twice. It's always going to be slightly different. And obviously handstands, we have that kind of that quest for that ultimate moment of perfection when you get everything right and you're just like, I got it right and I held it right and blah. But at the same time, this ability to be able to go translate my audio cueing of going, I want you to fall this way, I want you to demonstrate like an inside hip or legs too low or a rotation or a counter rotation or, you know, whatever we're filming. And they were able to do that. So they had this kind of center point. We could think of like the perfect form, or the perfect form you can display as the center point of the storm. And then from that, they're able to branch out and display all the different kind of errors or ways away from that center point. So it kind of makes us a bit of like, I don't know, I suppose a mind map of, you know, mistake, and then the mistake will lead to a fall or a less efficient technique or something like that. And it's really like, it's an interesting concept to, we could take into our training of like, we could spend time doing it right. And obviously that's what we should be doing a lot towards. But what if we threw out all the rules? What if we were like, okay, what if we threw out all the rules? What if we decided some of the rules were optional and accept that it was going to make us fall? Like, this is kind of one of those things that's kind of interesting, where it's like, oh, even on a straight handstand, I'm going to do my straight handstand, but I'm going to deliberately close my shoulders. I'm going to hold my shoulders too close. I'm going to get used to that sensation, and I'm going to challenge myself. And we always have a zone. There's a zone where we can maintain balance, and then there's a zone that goes too far. For whatever reason, strength, out of alignment, center mass passes too far, we won't be able to maintain it. But what if we were to flirt with these lines of, we have this perfect point we're trying to find, we're trying to go as far outside as we can, and we're going to try, you know, break the rules. Like, oh, we're going to, you know, very simple, straight handstand, we'll try to close the shoulders, and then we'll try to think, like, what are the other compensations that happen upstream? We could arch the back. We could arch the back at the T-spine, at the lumbar spine. We could pike the hips and stick the butt out. Could you find all of those mistakes? And then could you find, like, you know, into the dark forest, then find your way back to the straight line? Because this is kind of happening when we lose balance anyway, and then we reestablish the alignment we're looking for. But what if we were to deliberately go hunting for it, like shine a light into darkness? And it's kind of interesting, just like, oh, you know, even on shapes and stuff, like say, for example, we're doing tuck or pike, and I was like, okay, I want to, you know, legs too high, lower back too arched, legs slightly separated, one knee bent, one knee soft, foot soft. Like, this kind of level of body control dissociated from the balance control is one of the things that is very useful. One, to give us our sensory texture base, and that we know the difference between right and wrong, and it's not just hit and miss. But then if we're able to sense when what exactly is wrong, or by replicating it, then when we're doing it wrong in the way prescribed form method, then we're able to go like, okay, maybe we can do it right because we know how to feel it. Like, oh, I know the effect of the sensation it has when my toes aren't pointed, or my knees, one knee is higher than the other, or my leg isn't bent exactly where I want it. And that kind of level of precision on the body is just interesting, because we have to think about shifting focus. And we know when we shift focus or have a task, when we balance, our balance generally improves. So we're taking the idea of having, you know, say our two awarenesses I've spoken of. We have peripheral awareness and we have focused awareness, or focused attention, peripheral attention, focused attention. So focused attention is when we're focusing on something. I'm focusing on my screen right in front of me now, but there's things happening around me in kind of cloud of awareness. It's the same where if I'm doing handstands, I'm focusing on my hands and I'm using my peripheral awareness on my body Then every now and then, a object, something in that peripheral awareness gets decided as of more importance than my balance. My body brings that to awareness. But what we're doing instead is we're putting the balance onto the peripheral attention. So we're not actively involved in the balance. We're letting that happen. But we're going through the body and trying to use focus attention on a body part or a body geometry, which body geometry you think of as a compound of sensations, like what does the hip feel? What does the knee feel? What does the obliques feel? Whatever. And then we're trying to go through that and try alter something with that while letting the balance and everything happening at the hands and shoulder level go on autopilot. Now, it can be interesting because this is where your sort of your default technique comes out. You have your true technique, or you have your technique you're practicing. It's like, okay, this is the technique I'm practicing. I want to get really good at it. I'm going to be pushing, blah, 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 doing all these things. But then I stop focusing. I stop my focus attention on my shoulder, on my correct elevation where I think it should be. I take some power, mental power away from that. I put it into my legs or my hips or trying to feel something to figure out what I actually need to alter. And then the body defaults to its most efficient technique it can keep in the peripheral awareness without the constant maintenance of the focused attention. So this is one of these ideas that is kind of interesting for me anyway, because we begin to see, like, there's our technique, our perfect technique, when we're focusing and trying to hold all these little data points in the mind to make them do what we want them to do. But that once they start fading, that's when things go onto autopilot and the body goes, hold on, there's, I would describe it as like the focused attention, it basically turns the power up. It gives more voltage to something, or it gives more energy to it. And that allows us to be a bit better. Whereas once we take that away, it down-regulates a bit because the attention from the brain has gone somewhere else and the body has to find more efficient solutions to deal with the reduced power. So it's always kind of interesting that you can, like, you could maintain your shape, but when you start looking at tweaking these little details or trying to do things wrong or find other stuff, then suddenly what happens downstream in the shoulders, arms, hands, balance, whatever, goes on the autopilot and has to compensate for your alignments. So my challenge would be to try hold things wrong, but deliberately. Like, this is the thing, it's not a, I'm just going to hold a bad handstand. It's, I'm going to hold a specific mistake. I'm going to hold a tuck handstand, but one leg is going to be slightly less bent at the knees than the other one and slightly higher. I'm going to try hold my handstand lopsided. I'm going to, you know, let one shoulder be more elevated than the other. I'm going to hold a little bit of weight too much onto the outside of one hand and too much on the inside of the other hand, so the shape is slightly shifted. There's obviously a lot of these mistakes you can make. And if you're used to making, if you have one consistent mistake you always make, you could try find a mistake that is the other side of that mistake and try making that. So then we have both sides of the mistake and try find the center from there. So it's just interesting, like, you know, seeing the skill level of these people and seeing them able to, like, go, okay, basically, you know, as I said, I documented basically every handstand shape we could, also documented basically every mistake we could make in a handstand, and they're all intentional, essentially, bar, like, I got a lot of them when they're falling out as well, anyway, but it's just interesting that this is the level of control, and it's kind of one of those quotes, it's one of those motivational quotes, I think it's a juggling motivational quote. Amateurs practice till they drop. Professionals practice till they can't. And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. It's like, oh, we're practicing, you know, different ideas. Like, oh, amateur, just keep going, keep practicing. Professional, you have to display your stuff. So you have to be comfortable with the mistakes. You have to be comfortable with the mistakes because things will go wrong, particularly if you're in a display format, either I'm performing or trying to show something, or, you know, even Instagram, I suppose, if I'm trying to record some videos for that, you know, I need to be able to, well, I suppose Instagram, you're always trying to show everything perfect and that you never make mistakes, but, you know, performance and other things where it's live, things get sloppy and you have to be able to correct them. And I can remember even this concept coming in from his training with a juggler called Sergei Ignatov, who, if people don't know him, he's considered one of the greats at juggling. He was from the Russian school, learned the KISS method from Violetta and Nicholas KISS, I think, or Alexander KISS, Alexander Violetta. Anyway, who are immense jugglers who apparently learned the juggling technique. The story goes, their dad was a janitor at a theater, and he watched a guy called Enrico Rastelli doing his juggling practice in the evening, and learned the secrets of his technique from watching it, and then taught his kids, and his kids are very good, and then they taught the KISS technique at the Russian State School of Juggling. Whether that's true or not, who knows, but you know, bit of legendary behind this technique. But it's very good classical juggling technique, a very clean technique. But one of the things he would have us practice do is practice the mistakes. Just come back to me. It's like, there's basically four mistakes and four corrections you can make in a classical juggling practice. And they all relate to kind of misalignment of the shoulders, hips, and elbows and all this. And once you have your frame set up, so your alignment of your hip, your shoulders and elbows, and your throwing cadence fine, then most of your mistakes are to do with the hips and shoulders not rotating, or one shoulder being ahead of the other. So his way of correcting them was, you would turn on a spot one direction, you'd turn on a spot the other direction, you'd walk forward in a circle, backwards in a circle, and obviously clockwise and counterclockwise. And being able to do this was basically teaching you how your patterns would go wrong, but then also being able to change between these mistakes was how you correct your patterns. So just an insight from a different school of thought on making mistakes, and making the mistakes intentional to the point where you can go, okay, my center is my good technique where I want to be, and the mistake is somewhere around that. Obviously, this mistake, you can think of it as a zone of mistake. We have perfect technique in the center. There's kind of a cloud hovering around that where it's a mistake, but I'm still balanced. Then there's a, you know, it's gone too far and I'm going to fall out, basically, if I try to stand or walk or something like this. But then this idea of having this cloud of mistakes, and then slowly as you get better, you can expand that cloud out, so there's bigger and bigger mistakes you can fix and get back to your center. But if you're only relying on your mistakes, this is why I bring this up more than anything else, is most of our mistakes we don't make intentionally. They happen and we deal with them on the fly. This way is we practice a consistent mistake and get used to practicing the zone of going back from it and to it. So that gives a feeling what it feels like when I need to move into that position, or how I might lose my balance in that direction, what it means to stabilize and what it means to return it. And this is what this practice could benefit you in your juggling, or in juggling obviously, but in your handstands. It's like, oh, I've got this, I've practiced the mistake so many times, I can't fall, versus I'm doing my handstands and occasionally I end up with my shoulders too open, occasionally they're too closed, occasionally I'm slightly twisted, and occasionally I'm slightly rotated. You know, all these kind of things, instead of making the mistake happen by chance, we're forcing it to happen, we're practicing it, so then we get it. So that was my little rant on making mistakes and putting it into usage. So that kind of brings me to the next kind of thing of, like, we have the 5 P's of gymnastics bodies, where this is, if you haven't listened to our episode with Ryan from Gymnastics Bodies, I assume you have, because 2 episodes ago, and you know, they had their 5P format, which I think is very good. It's like, it's a very succinct way of explaining stuff we've talked about before, where you have prepare, practice, play, push, and then something else, which I've forgotten, which I'll very quickly bring up. Did you ponder? Reflect. Yeah. So this is one of these things that's like a very interesting way of setting out a session. It's like, a lot of people do it anyway, but it is, you know, particularly when we're dealing with a skill-based discipline, it can be hard, because a lot of the stuff we hear about is from sports science and sports training, where everything has to kind of go hard, and you know, these are the people writing about stuff, and no one's really talking about, like, making things easy or how you might lay things out, particularly for a more general trainee who does things for enjoyment. So we have the first bit of their framework is prepare. You're doing your warm-up movements, the things you specifically need to work on that day. It's like, oh, you know, I'm going to be doing handstands, probably need to warm up the wrists. I'm going to be doing squats, probably don't need to warm up your wrists. You know, it could be selective. Instead of having a general warm-up, you have a specific warm-up. Then we have practice. So prepare can be much bigger than your warm-up as well, because I want to practice certain shapes of handstands. So my prepare could be, say I'm working on tuck and straddle and I want to practice balancing them. Well, I could, you know, warm up my tuck shape, I warm up my shoulders, I warm up the handstands. I might do some shapes on the wall. That's part of prepare. I might do some shapes where I practice coming the rebalance drills using that shape. So like heel pulls or toe pulls using a tuck shape. So I get a bit of prepare for feeling that. But once again, we're in prepare. So we're not trying to waste energy. We're just trying to get the feel for what it is. Then I can move on to my practice. I'll like practice holding my tucks. I'll practice getting into the tuck. I'll practice holding it. Then play. This is where we could start making our mistakes. It's like I'm deliberately going to hold my tuck with too open, too closed, legs not symmetric, slightly shifted. Begin to get a bit of, you know, experimenting with what you've been practicing. So instead of just having one set thing where it's like it's very binary, right or wrong, I've done that section. Now I'm like, okay, I'll go a bit more. I'll try to do some of these mistakes. Push. This bit, as I say, feels, it's the workout part. This is where, okay, I'm going to get a bit of sweat on. I'm going to work my endurance. Okay, I want to work my endurance on my my pike or tuck handstand. Okay, I might set up and do some endurance holds, semi-supported. So what a semi-supported endurance hold is where I would set up near a wall and I'll know roughly the direction I'm going to lose, either overbalance or underbalance as the most common. So if it was say underbalance, I'll set up like a chest wall. I'll come into my tuck handstand. And then I'll balance it as long as I can freestanding. And then once I lose the strength or lose it because of mistake, I'll come onto the wall and I'll try and reestablish the shape as best I can. And then either I'll come into balance or I'll just use it using the wall to support. And that can get me, you know, a bit more endurance work without having to rely on the balance side of things. And then ponder, reflect on how the session went. And this journaling aspect, I feel, is maybe lacking a little in a formalized manner in a lot of practices. Because like we always hear about workout journals and other journals of other things. It's like, oh, we keep our sets and reps and weights lifted. That's pretty good, but could we do more? Like, could we build up a bit more of a journal for ourselves? It's one of those things that, like, you know, I've done a decent bit over the years, but haven't, you know, used to do it a lot, but probably not so much anymore. But where you're like, okay, can I, instead of just, you know, rating my sets and reps, it's like, oh, held, goal, you know, targets achieved, target not achieved, increase, decrease, which are all very important things to track. It's like, can I start, you know, recording an ambience? Like, oh, like, if we were to set it up in a sort of formal thing, it's like, what happened before the workout? Okay, you know, I was coming from work, had a great day at work, had a shit day at work, came into the session feeling tired. Okay, you know, came into the session feeling fresh, hadn't eaten, or had eaten too close to the session. These kind of things could be recorded just to give you a feeling like, are they important or are they not? There's a pattern build up. Could we think about like, okay, prepare, do my prepare sections, like, how does the body feel? How do I actually feel? Like, this is the kind of thing, this ponder could go out throughout the whole workout. It's like, how does my body feel? Does it need a bit more? Does it need a bit less? You know, oh, I felt shit coming in, but I've done my warm up. I feel actually pretty good now. I'm ready to go. Okay, good. That's pretty good. I feel shit. I need to do a bit more of a warm up. Okay, good. Good to note. Practice, you know, how are my skills going? What mistakes am I making? This is one of the things, we always want to record the good stuff, but we never really want to record the bad stuff. It's like, what mistake am I making and what conscious action did I make to correct that mistake and did it work? This is one of those interesting ones because we can get into a mistake loop so much where it's like, you know, tried to point my toes, didn't point my toes, tried to lock my knees, didn't lock my knees, tried to lock my knees. You know, did I just try to fix it, or did I do something specific to fix it? Did I try to put all my mental intent on these, and did that help? Did I correct what I was doing, but then say I want to do a 30-second hold with straight knees, whatever shape, and then I got my knees straight, but then I only held for 15 seconds. So then it's like, okay, well, I didn't get my target goal hold time for that set, but I did correct the mistake. So, you know, these things could be like, oh, I didn't hold 30 seconds. But acknowledging your successes as well as failures is, you know, particularly for those who are keen to beat themselves down up a little or define things as not good, you'll always find something to define as not good. So finding something on the other side that you can acknowledge the small victories as well is always pretty good. Then, you know, play. It's like document the things you're going to play with. So think about like, oh, okay, I'm going to, you know, have a little plan. I'm going to try this. Tick it off. Play, there's no right or wrong. You just do it. So it's kind of like, I'm going to do this. Did it work? Yay. You know, smiley faces, sad faces, you know, these kind of things. Making it for yourself. Push. This is, you know, where you're kind of journaling for your workout. Like, this is, you know, where you're trying to beat the logbook. Because we don't normally beat the logbook in the first three segments of this format. But you do try and beat it in the push. Maybe not every workout, but, you know, over a period of time, that's when you're looking at. And then ponder, it's like, how was the session? You know, how do I feel at the end of the session? Do I feel tired? Do I feel energized? Am I motivated? Am I upset at my performance? You know, I'm happy with the session. Why? Why am I happy with the session? What went well? Why am I unhappy with the session? Okay, what could I do differently next time? You know, what's going on? I was distracted. Okay, I'm distracted. Note these things down. You know, these are all good to give you an ambience of your kind of handstand life journal. It is one of those things. There was a format from juggling convention, the kind of reviews and comments afterwards of high, low, crush, bane, goal was one of these formats that is quite nice to use. So high, it was like, what was the high point? It's like, this is for, say, a convention weekend. People would share their kind of their little blurb, the little review of it. What was the low point? What was the low point? Who was your crush at the convention? Your crush at the convention, you know, it doesn't have to be a romantic crush, but it was a performer or someone teaching someone or someone who taught you something or someone just helped you out, you know, a bit of a way of acknowledging that. Or could this be straight up like, this person was hot? Bane. What was your bane? Like, who was your, you know, born in darkness? What was it like? Oh, this trick was the bane. What was my goal of the convention? My goal of the convention was to hang out. My goal of the convention was to learn some new tricks. So we could adapt that kind of format to our journal where we're trying to document having a specific highs, specific things that went well, specific things that were shit. You know, who was my crush in the gym? Who was hanging out in the gym? Was it someone on Instagram? I've seen someone on Instagram. Oh, they gave me ideas. What was the bane of the session? You know, I ate too big a sandwich beforehand and it was annoying me. And, you know, so like, what was my goal? What was my goal of the session was to go in, just do the session. My goal of the session was to work on these specific things and I worked on them. My goal in the session was to work on these specific things, but I forgot to work on them because I got distracted by something else. But it's okay because I had a good time, or, oh shit, I really should have worked on that, or I skipped my conditioning at the end. So, you know, these kind of things can give a journal feel to our training sessions that go beyond just sets and reps, because sets and reps is very, it's just very linear, and it cannot give a true view of how the session went. So I'm going to wrap up the cast there. I know it's a bit of a short one today, but I hope I gave you some little things I've been noodling on lately. Other than that, I'd like to, you know, Mikhail's not here, so I'm going to plug my own stuff. Check out modernmobility.com is my site for all things flexibility. We've got some cool programs. We just dropped the standing split head to toe one recently. Pretty cool program, pretty cool skill. Other than that, we will be back next week with more.
Why do you make me do this, Emmett?
And other than that, I've been Emmett Lewis, and you guys have been great.
The Handstand Cast is brought to you by Handstand Factory. and is produced by Motion Impulse. Thanks for tuning in. You can find a full transcript of each episode, along with the show notes and any relevant references, on handstandfactory.com/podcast. Thanks to Isaac for editing and Jordan for transcriptions. Music by Daniel Horwath. If you want to support the show, you can buy us a coffee on buymeacoffee.com or consider starting one of our Handstand Factory online programs. Links are in the show notes.